Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. When people have addictions, they have to get over a first barrier of shame. That's an enormous barrier that some people never get through. Shame protects us from the buried emotions that are actually driving the addiction. Shame is not the core. But there's a lot of people in the world who would like to believe it or who believe it is. We now have better tools and skills to know better, to see that it's actually anger or hurt or sadness repression, the fear of those emotions that corresponds with this protective layer of shame. If you state it in really simple terms, it's just safer for us to like sit at home and not tell anybody about what's going on for us than it is to go share our hurt and anger that we may not even know we have because it's buried under the shame. So it's not that it's safer. We're not even conscious of that. It just is safer. Whether we're conscious of it, our system takes care of us to produce the shame so that we don't express the anger and hurt. But then we don't know it's there to protect us from the repression. So there we are then with shame, and the shame gets directed towards the behavior of addiction. And that's the scapegoating, if you will. It's not a scapegoating because we really are ashamed of the addiction or whatever that is. But the scapegoating is that really we're more ashamed of being our authentic self. And it started a long time ago, before we picked up this particular, you know, substance or activity. Sometimes when I don't talk about addiction on here very often because everybody's in such a different place. And I've been kind of waiting for Anna Lemke from Dopamine Nation to her last book. Oh gosh, the title of it is Finding Balance in a World or an Age of Indulgence. Anna Lemke wrote Dopamine Nation. She's considered one of the leading experts on addiction, but also the pleasure-pain cycle and how that ties into our evolution. And then I would say, and she would say too, to our intergenerational trauma. We have buried emotions. And she says, process those buried emotions. But her framework is really focused on dopamine and how dopamine plays into the survival, and then how we're addicted because the survival system has kicked in and we're avoiding pain. Our system is producing suffering. Then we get relief. And then the system goes, okay, so that works. Let's produce more suffering. And then therefore you go back to the addiction, and that's how it gets created. That's the pleasure-pain cycle. She explains that our ancestors had to endure a lot of psychological, physical, emotional suffering to have even little reward, to work all day and finally get somewhere where you can have a little bit of food. And that happened for so long that we're conditioned to suffer and seek reward. So we're not just seeking reward. We're conditioned to suffer so that we seek reward, and then the seeking of the reward kicks in the suffering again. This is such important information that has to shift the whole addiction recovery field first before I even felt that I wanted to talk about it, because she has science. She's a scientist more than I am, obviously. And I've really enjoyed having scientists and science support fully, I think, what KI is doing. But when it comes to a particular area, there's just a lot of like stigma and perspectives around addiction that are not informed around things like the pleasure pain cycle and how it really works, how we create suffering for safety, and therefore we create the addictions unconsciously to stay safe from what we buried. These are all things that are not yet in the public domain, and I don't have a huge following. So I wait for people like Anna Lemke to come on so that people start to hear that. And then she has just enough things in her message that I think people will become interested here, because she says, look, if you want to deal with addiction, process buried emotions. And then you got the trauma researchers, Bessel van der Kolk, that are saying genuine transformation is processing buried emotions in present awareness. You put those folks together, we have KI. It's such a perfect marriage. Well, now that she's out talking about that, and she's saying moderation is the answer, because when you try to stop everything or something all at once, your system kicks in more suffering. That's the pleasure-pain cycle. And people often then, they get into this, even if they get sober for a while, they can't maintain it. And they go back because their system kicks in suffering, and then it goes back to its old trauma responses of let's soothe that instead of feel that. Or, you know, we're not processing buried emotions. The buried emotions produce more suffering. If we don't process the buried emotions, then there's more suffering, and then there's the addiction. Another thing needed to change before I talked about it was the strict duality between sobriety and using. And well, she just says moderation. But the way I say it is more harm reduction. Moderation sounds like that we can just use a little bit of heroin. I mean, you can moderate anything, but some drugs I've learned we just have to go to different things because they cover up too much. They drown out the emotions that we've buried since childhood. And with those drugs in our system, we really don't know that we have buried emotions. And so using certain drugs, which you have to define for yourself, might not be a good choice even to moderate on that. But like going from alcohol to, well, I don't want to say food, because some people have a ferocious food addiction. And they would argue with me. They would say, no, that's not stepping down. That's not harm reduction. But it's very subjective whether something is harm reduction. Somebody has a ferocious food addiction would not consider stepping down from something to food addiction as a harm reduction. But someone who starts to use food in a way that's more manageable than how they used alcohol might be able to access their body more, which is what it's all about. Somebody who's, and always consult with your doctor. I'm not a doctor or therapist or psychiatrist. But if you're taking medication for depression and anxiety, I would be talking to my doctor about whether that covers up important emotions that you've already buried and streamlines you in certain ways that artificially regulate your system. Artificially means you don't do it naturally through processing buried emotions. And it's only temporary. So it covers up the buried emotions, and then it's only temporary, so you have to keep using it. And then that covers up your capacity to even know what the root is with some medications. But again, I don't advise against stopping using anything, legal or illegal. KI is not involved in that conversation, really. We don't make suggestions because we're not doctors or therapists. We also want to give people agency and self-trust through this work to feel and express what's true for them and define recovery in a way that's right for them, because there's so much codependency. And that's another issue that Dan and I have been waiting to get more public awareness on, where codependency comes from. If you listen to me, you know that I've been saying that the science is telling us it's, drum roll please, do you guys know? Buried anger. So that's a major issue. You have a lot of codependents trying to help addicts, but the reason the codependents are helping them has nothing to do with the addict, really. The codependent gets their needs met, stays safe from the buried anger by focusing outward, and then gets love and approval, thereby skewing the recovery of the person they're trying to help. Because, well, just like when I was a teacher, if I help you ignore the root of suffering, you can't end it. And I'm a part of that. In the simplest sense, codependency is like being dependent on other people for my well-being. If I have a so-called addict in my life that I can identify as such, I can avoid my own stuff. Did you know that I've heard the reason that codependency didn't rise to the level of being a diagnosis is because the people who put the DSM together were people who were codependent with buried anger and didn't want to have their issues in the DSM like that. That makes perfect sense to me, actually. The bias of researchers and therapists and those who create the modalities that are codependent. No wonder we have such a low success rate on addiction. It's a relational issue. It's a family issue. And that's one of my criticisms. By labeling somebody as an addict or somebody who is with a diagnosis, and keep your diagnosis. I'm not saying don't go to your therapist or whoever diagnoses you. But by doing that, it's like we pretend that the family wasn't fully involved in that and that there isn't suffering in the family because of it. My dad was codependent. My grandfather would go into bars and my grandmother would get my dad to go get him. And my dad surely then got love from grandma by rescuing. And so my dad, when he had kids, us, we became addicts, but he was the codependent helper. So by shining the light on each one of us, he never got to his issues. And yet we all got created together through the same intergenerational web of conditioning. It wasn't anybody, there wasn't an addict in the family. There was this family, like all families, that had repression and trauma, and people played different roles to get their needs met. Some people were trying to help people that were sick, and they got love and approval and stayed safe from their issues that way. And then some people were the identified members in my family, and we got our needs met by, well, a lot of different ways. Being rescued, not taking responsibility for our suffering fully, by getting into recovery programs that didn't get to buried emotions and family trauma. So we just all played, even in the recovery game, my family played the game of trauma continuously. Even though we were in recovery, we were still acting from it. When I was in 12-step, I was just seeking love and approval from mom, dad, brother, sister, sponsors, people at the meetings. Just more trauma. Calling it recovery. Just acting out the same patterns. And then helping other people. I became, if I was not already, codependent in role. Not, I was already codependent with buried anger because, well, you have to focus outward when you do. But then when I came to recovery, I still couldn't get to the buried anger, so I focused outward in more specific ways. Like, well, now I'm going to help people with recovery. I became a sponsor and then a teacher. And my codependent buried anger unconsciousness. We're always seeking to get our needs met until we're embodied. That's just a fact, because to embody presence, we have to get to the emotions that we had to store when we were kids, when our needs weren't met. So the needs are right there with them. And we're acting it out, even as teachers, helpers, coaches, addicts. We're all doing it in some way until we're not. Mothers and fathers who have children who have mental health issues are playing out the dynamic right now. The idea that there's a sick person, as if we can isolate someone within consciousness like that, and then we just scapegoat them. And if we could really treat addiction as a family or a relational issue, I would be very much interested in having conversations this year and beyond. So if you look at Lemke and you look at the research that emotional repression drives addiction, and you see that trying to quit all addiction is often about getting love and approval from people still coming from the same trauma, then you start to open to this other way. call it authentic recovery, but you know, it's not the name. It's like, it's not just another name. You know, I could put names on it, like KI or natural recovery, but it's lived. It's when you really see that you can't get out of addiction the same way you got in it. You didn't get your needs met. You have buried emotions. You can't get out of recovery by quitting and getting your needs met, having everybody think you're something, because it doesn't work. Then you might just become addicted to getting other people's approval or something, or you already are. But then it poses, like, what's the way? If both using and having to quit is both coming from just, I need to stay safe from my buried emotions. I don't want to process those. I just want to quit at the surface. What's the way then? It's exactly like Anna Lemke says. It's processing your buried emotions. It's like Bessel van der Kolk is saying, for genuine transformation, do that in present awareness. And what we say in KI is, here are the tools. Now you go apply it to the things that matter. Because the things that matter have to do with how you can't feel and express what's true to people. Just people. There are certain people who say, well, it's about unconditional love. If we can just unconditionally love each other, we can solve addiction. Well, who could do that when you have buried emotions? We're always placing conditions on each other and ourselves until we heal that within. So we can't look to others. We have to first look within to the buried emotions and stay there. And then our relationships with others get included. The codependents who come into our lives trying to fix or change us, we can say no. By processing buried anger, no. I don't need your help. That's been part of the problem, is I haven't trusted myself my whole life, and now you want to fix me? Well, we can't do that. If we don't make processing the buried anger that drives a lot of addiction a priority. So we live in a boundaryless, disconnected recovery where we can't trust ourselves. And we're not focusing on feeling and expressing what's true because we're conditioned to think that's not safe anyway, even though that's the way. So who will be the leaders in the world? I mean, Anna Lemke, I hope that more people come here so I can be, and Dan will be. He's a powerful voice around this subject. He really does, and nobody really watches us. But just go watch his critique of 12-step on YouTube. It's a loving, gentle, fact-based, or not fact-based, but there's just a lot of really clear observations in that short video. I'm going to bring him on here, and we're going to talk about it. Look, I'll leave you with this, because this is just a teaser for what's to come here on this podcast channel around addiction, because we're going to open the subject up now much more now that Lemke's work is out there more and we have the science to back up the fact that it's repression driving addiction. I want to pull Dan on here and we're going to do a critique of the 12-step program. So be forewarned. So I'm going to bring him on and I'm going to poke that bear a little bit in him because he has a lot to say. And if I can get it out of him and if you guys can endure any triggers, I think you're going to really like this. So if you're in 12-step, be ready because it probably will trigger you, but both of us were triggered out of 12-step in some way because we couldn't get better. I mean, what is better? It's not just stopping using something, it's getting better, like doing well. I'm in joy now. I live that way. And for us to explain how we live in such freedom, but by doing it in such a different way than the way you're doing it, it could be triggering. Well, listen for that, and then I'm going to put a link in here. If anybody wants to do my March Jumpstart, I do a Jumpstart group teaching people the repression inquiry for 1 month in a group. You don't need to come and talk to me for that. You just sign up for the group. You'll see that link, and in that same link, you'll see a chance to come talk to me just for free before you decide to work with me one-on-one. And that chance is for me too. It's not just for you to come talk to me to see if it's the right fit. It's for me too, to see if, like, is this the best fit for you and me? Maybe you should go to Jumpstart. Maybe not. But I noticed those one-on-one intensives that I like so much are much better if we get to meet each other a little bit first. Okay, thank you for listening.